has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Are you the first one?
I think so.
Okay. Let's give it some more time.
Honka.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We'll start in about 1 minute, maybe less. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Edulakshminha, Tati, Erura. Alphabet Gimel, Yutat Sadi. Kabil Rinat. Amcha sagvenu taharenu nora ufreshayan sintet nun. Come in. Na gibor.
No? You got any spray your partner, sir?
No need.
No need?
Nagibor
has joined.
Kevavacham Ngimel Dalad Yutkav Shin Barhim Taharim Rahame Sikatha Amid Gamlem Tetresh Saditap Gimel Hasim Kadosh, Birov Tuka, Nael Adatecha, Het Kufbet, Tet Nunayan. Yachid Gehe, Lamcha Penei, Zohre Kidushatecha, Yud Gimelamet, Zayin Kuf. Shabbatenu Kabel, Ushmatzi akatenu yodea ta'alumo shin kufal tadi yuta. In the eighth verse of the Anabakoach, we say in a whisper. Our class today is a basic class. It's class number 13, which you could find on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, in the left column, in the 13th row. And that class is about kashrut and its meaning. You'll find the handout there, and we will start after the L'shem Yehud. Lushen Yehud Kuchabrihu Ishkinte Bidkilu Urkimu Utkilu Utkilu Urkimu Layakta Lashem Yudhe Bavave Yehuda Shalim Bashen Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayehino Amadunai Elohino Alena Masei Adenu Kanane Alena Masei Adenu Kananehu. Before I explain anything about kashrut or kosher, I need to explain about myself. I never cook. In fact, I joke that says I have a virgin kitchen that's never been cooked in. This is my choice of lifestyle. I keep kosher. If I go to a restaurant, I go to a kosher restaurant. If I buy anything, the items that I buy that I do not have to cook are kosher. They have a heksher, which I will explain as we go on. I do have two microwaves, and I know that that's not necessarily the healthiest way of eating, but it is the choices that I have made. The question, why do I have two microwaves, has to do with milk and meat, and I will explain as we go along. The definition of kosher. The dictionary meaning of kosher and the street use of the word kosher are somewhat different. Kosher is spelled in Hebrew, Kaf Shin Resh. From the standpoint of the letters themselves, this is an unwritten commentary. The resh we know is the head. The kaf is the palm. And the shin is higher. There is a connection between the head and the palm, between the thoughts and the actions. And that connection has to do with fire. It has to do with passion, but on a very practical letter, it has to do it with the heat of things, as I will explain. The meaning of the word in Hebrew is fit, valid, proper, ability, proficiency, power, opportunity, to make something right and to be right. The definition of kosher in English is one, lawful or proper, allowed by law or regarded as correct or proper. A second definition, preparing or selling kosher food. Preparing or selling foods that are fit and suitable under Jewish law. And a third definition, lawful or proper, allowed by law or regarded as correct or proper. Is there a difference between the first definition and the third definition? The answer is yes. One has to do with whether it's a noun. The other has to do with whether it's a verb, because kosher in English can be either. In slang usage, in English slang, it's kosher is used to describe things that are qualified under the law, such as, this action that you are planning to take is kosher, or his actions are kosher. Or she went to the mikveh, so now she is kosher. Or do they do things kosher? In Jewish religious law, kosher means according to the Jewish law, this food is being served in a kosher manner. The word kosher only applies to food. The preparation of food, the serving of food, the eating of food that is based on Jewish or Torah regulations. These regulations come from the Torah and from the oral law. And let us take a look at what the Torah says generally. The first time kosher food preparation is hinted at is in the time of Noah. Remember your Sunday school training? The animals boarded the ark two by two. Except the clean animals, which boarded 7 by 7. In that parasha, upon the exit by the family of Noah, Hashem gives him the 7 Noahide laws, one of which gives Noah permission to eat animals, just not living animals. prior to the flood, man did not have permission to eat animals. And after the flood, he was given permission, since many negative actions of the generation of the flood required reincarnation into animals and plants that are eaten by animals, and rocks and streams that provide nutrients for both the plants and the animals. Man eats animals to provide a path to elevate the human souls when it is time for them to die and rise to a higher level. The word kosher, as spelled above, is not in the Torah at all. The first time kosher is described in the Torah, it is in a concealed way. It describes the serving by Abraham to the three men, the three angels who came to visit him after his bris, his circumcision. It says he served them butter and milk and the calf he had prepared and set it before them. Then the Torah says he stood by them under the tree and they ate. I will explain below how this coded message applies to kosher food. The next time the Torah refers to kosher food is in chapter 23, verse 19 of Exodus. In this chapter, which is the Parashah of Mishpatim, it says, "The first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring into the house of Hashem, which is the temple. You shall not boil a kid in its mother's milk." This last phrase repeats in the Torah two additional times. And this is very unusual, since the Torah does not add additional words or letters. The second time the phrase occurs in chapter 34, verse 26. And this chapter is describing the second set of tablets. It is an indication that the regulations are somewhat different than they were before the sin of the golden calf. The third time it appears in Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 21. And this section of the Torah also adds additional regulations regarding what is kosher. The Kabbalah explains this phrase, "Do not boil a kid in its mother's milk," as "do not mix the essence of things that you put into your mouth." This is because milk has the energy of continuity, since milk, when it spoils, becomes cheese or yogurt, and when that spoils, it becomes a different cheese or another product that people still may eat. It never truly spoils, meaning it's no longer capable of supporting life. We may decide to throw it out because it spills or because we don't like what it has become, but it still, if we needed to, we could eat that product and it would continue to support our life. Meat is a different type of energy. Meat, since it cannot be eaten live, has the energy of death. Death is a negative energy. Continuity is a positive energy. The kosher regulations essentially say do not mix these two types of energies when you eat them. And it has come to mean do not mix them at any time. Actually, when we look at the kosher regulations, we find this "do not mix" as being only in one direction. The regulations are one must wait 4 to 6 hours after eating meat prior to eating milk products. It is also highly recommended that one brush one's teeth after eating meat and before eating milk products. Why? The 4 to 6 hours represents the time in the digestive system. The brushing of teeth is the idea of removing any leftover meat in your mouth before you eat milk. When one eats milk products, one may eat meat with only a 5 or 10 minute delay. And you do not have to brush your teeth, although it is recommended. And in essence, we do not want to contaminate the energy of continuity with the energy of death. While continuity will overcome the energy of death, and so we do not have to wait the same length of time. We are also asking the question, what makes an animal and or a fish kosher? Also supports the idea of do not mix the energies. A fish must have two signs, at least two fins and scales. An animal must have cloven hooves and chew its cud. What do these signs represent? Chewing its cud represents binding by striking, which is also what the scales on a fish represent. Because the scales reflect light, chewing its cud means it chews, it goes into one stomach, but then it's brought back up to be chewed again. Cloven hooves indicate a separation within the nature of the animal that keeps the two energies of continuity and death apart. This is also the idea of the two fins, indicating two types of energy in that animal. Just as a discussion point, octopi, the plural of octopus, have 8 legs. Which indicates they have 8 types of energy. Just as our exterior shows us our interior through the science of face and hand reading, animals also show their interior through their exterior. Here are some other kosher regulations. There are many other regulations about the laws of kashrut. All of them relate to energy transfer. When something is hot, energy transfer is easier and faster, and thus our concern about it must be greater. When things are cold, like in a refrigerator, our concern can be less, since energy transfer is slower. And this is why we do not worry about putting milk on the same shelf in a refrigerator as we do a plate of leftover meat. Although many people are told by their rabbis to make sure they put these kinds of things on different shelves, or preferably different refrigerators if you're wealthy enough. This is building a fence around the Torah. I hope you can understand and can learn to think for yourself. Some of these regulations are as follows. Keep 2 sets of dishes. And this includes different pots and pans, one for milk and one for meat. Some people add 2 more sets for Shabbat. And some people add 4 additional sets for a total of 8 sets of dishes dealing with Pesach and the Shabbat of Pesach. All of these are additional fences. But let us look at the idea of the dishes. If the dish is made of clay or ceramic, then it is porous, and the energy of even cold things will remain with the dish. If the dish is metal or glass, it is not, and can be transformed from milk to meat more easily. And this is following energy transfer wisdom. Do not cook food on Shabbat, yet it is okay to keep things warm on a blech. This is because cooking does not take place below a certain level of temperature. Ask your rabbi what is considered that level of temperature. Just do not use that language, as he will not understand you. Cooking does not take place in the third vessel. On Shabbat, if I put a tea bag into a cup and pour water into it that is hot, it is considered cooking. Yet if I take the water from the heated pot and pour it into a cup, considered the second vessel, and then pour it into the cup with the tea bag, that is considered a third vessel and not considered cooking. This relates to the idea of the Sephirot that has no connection to the third level below them. In the Torah, certain birds are mentioned as not kosher, and all other birds are kosher. This is also true of insects, and especially locusts. There are four species of locusts that are mentioned in the Torah. The Ashkenazi have forgotten which is the proper locust, while the Sephardi living near the deserts did remember from the oral tradition. The Sephardi are allowed to eat these locusts, while the Ashkenazi are forbidden to learn from the Sephardi. Of course, the rabbis do not use this language. Fish are not to be served on the same plate as meat. And some build a fence and say fish courses are not to be on the table when meat is served. This means all fish dishes must be removed from the table. This is related to fish living its whole existence in water, which is chesed. And please see the parav meaning below. Parav means food that is acceptable to eat with meat, and it's acceptable to eat with milk. The kosher shechting, or slaughtering. A kosher animal that is killed in an unkosher manner is not kosher. There is meat served in modern delis called kosher style. This is not kosher according to the rabbis. And see the heksher below, meaning of heksher below. What is a kosher manner? According to modern science, the kosher animals have a different structure of arteries and veins in their brain case. A kosher animal loses its blood pressure in the brain when its neck arteries, like the carotid artery, is cut. And this happens in less than 30 seconds. And the animal becomes unconscious. And while unconscious, it cannot feel pain. And so it does not feel pain and does not have time to manifest the drug known as adrenaline into its bloodstream. Food that has adrenaline in it, meaning the animal was frightened before its death and it felt pain before its death, that animal released adrenaline into its bloodstream. And that is not a kosher animal anymore. And here's a description by Wikipedia regarding kosher slaughtering. The Hebrew term shechita, or which is anglicized, it's shechita or shechita is the ritual slaughter of mammals and birds for food according to Jewish dietary laws. And the animal must be killed with respect and compassion by a shochet. The word shochet is a ritual slaughterer. This is a religious Jew who is duly licensed and trained. The act is performed by severing the trachea, the esophagus, the carotid arteries, the jugular veins, and the vagus nerve in a swift action, usually an extremely sharp blade, only by a qualified shochet. That sharp blade can have no nicks or other forms that when the blade is sliced across the animal's neck, it might tear the animal, and that would cause it pain. And religious men who do perform shechting will grow their little fingernail longer than normal, and longer than the other nails, so that they can use that fingernail to run it across the blade to see if there's any cuts or nicks in the blade. Because they want to make sure that the animal is killed with respect and with compassion so that it has no pain. And there are opinions today, this is all an unwritten commentary, there are opinions today that there is no place in the world that does not have a kosher shechting. Or I should say it the other way around. There's no place in the world that does have a kosher shechting. Because the way animals are slaughtered in the factories, the meat processing factories, the sense is that the animals are frightened and thus feel pain or scared. And that tension of being scared puts adrenaline into their bloodstream. I'm continuing to read. According to the Jewish religious sources, the animal is now insensible to pain when that blade has cut their neck through all of those items, the trachea, the esophagus, etc. The animal does not feel pain. And it exsanguinates, meaning it dies in a prompt and precise action. The animal can be in a number of positions. When the animal is lying on its back, this is referred to as shechita munachat. When the animal is in a standing position, it is known as shechita me'umedat. Before the shechting, the slaughtering, the animal must be healthy, uninjured, and viable. If the hindquarters of the kosher mammals are to be eaten by Jews, they must be purged in accordance with a strict procedure, meaning stripped of the veins, the chelev, the fat and suet, and sinews. Because of the expense purging and the skill required to properly separate out these forbidden parts, a large portion of the meat of kosher mammals that are slaughtered through the shechita in the United States winds up on the non-kosher market. And this is one of the explanations given for the high cost of kosher beef and fowl. preparation. To start, the animal must be kosher. For mammals, this is restricted to ruminants, which have split hooves. Ruminants are those animals that chew their cud. For birds, the issue is more complicated. Biblically, all birds not specifically excluded. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, verses 12 to 18, are permitted. But according to rabbinic law, only birds with a tradition of being eaten are allowed. The kosher animal cannot be shot dead by a hunter or poleaxed, which had been common for centuries, which is stunning the animal, and is a common practice in modern animal slaughter since the first half of the 20th century, as it is considered that this would injure the animal, rendering the shechita invalid, as the meat would be treif non-kosher. After shechita of mammals, the shochet must feel the area around the lungs for scabbing, for adhesions, or for other lesions, which would render the animal not kosher. A source of kosher meat and slaughtering. The Torah states that the sheep and cattle should be slaughtered as I have commanded thee. But nowhere in the Torah, in the five books of Moses, are any of the practices of shechita described. Instead, they have been handed down orally and codified in the halakha in various sources. Most notably, the Codex of Laws called the Shulchan Aruch. The duties of the shochet. To fulfill the basic law of shechita, the majority of both the trachea and the esophagus, the windpipe and the food pipe, of a mammal, or the majority of either one of these in the case of birds, must be incised with a back and forth motion without violating one of the five major prohibited techniques or various more detailed rules. The five major forbidden techniques include pressing, pausing, tearing, piercing, or covering. A shochet must have studied these laws and demonstrate a thorough understanding of them, as well as have been carefully trained before he is allowed to shech meat unaided. My commentary. I have personally witnessed the kosher slaughter through various men over my years. And these men do not normally do the slaughtering, but have been trained in its knowledge. These are city dwellers in Los Angeles. They have been hired to slaughter chickens for the kapparot just prior to Yom Kippur. It's hard to believe that the chickens lined up to be slaughtered as if they knew this is the right thing for them. It is hard to believe that these men called shochets could be trained to look for disease in the birds to determine if they were kosher or not. And it is also hard to believe that these men were sensitive to the souls of the birds actually as well. Do not believe what I say. Go and see it for yourself and experience it for yourself. The five forbidden actions when slaughtering. Derasa, pressing. The knife must be drawn across the throat, either by forward or backward movements, not by hacking or pressing. Any undue pressure renders the animal unkosher. The rasa is the forbidden action that occurs when the shochet pushes the knife into the animal's throat, chops rather than slices, or positions the animal improperly so that either its head presses down on the blade as it expires, or the shochet must push the knife into the throat against the force of gravity. There are those who feel that it is forbidden to have the animal in an upright position during the shechita, due to the prohibition of drasa, pressing. They feel that the animal must be on its back, lying on its side, suspended upside down by a rope or a chain, or as is done in most commercial slaughtering houses, placed in a barrel-like pen that restrains the animal's limbs while the animal while it is turned on its back for slaughter. However, an expert shochet can slaughter the animal while it is upright without pressing the knife. And this method is employed in most smaller operations in America. Another form of forbidden shechting is called shehiya, delay or pausing. A pause or hesitation during the incision of even a moment makes the animal's flesh unkosher. The knife must move in an uninterrupted sweep. Shehiya occurs if the shochet accidentally stops the slaughtering process after either the trachea or the esophagus has been cut, but before they have been cut the majority of the way through. Pausing can happen accidentally if muscle contractions in the animal's neck pulls one of these organs out of contact with the blade. The latter case is especially common in turkeys. A third method, halada, digging or burying, the knife must be drawn over the throat so that it is visible while the shechita is being performed. It must not be stabbed into the neck or buried by fur, hide, or feathers in the case of a bird. Halada occurs if the shochet either accidentally cuts into the animal's throat so deeply that the entire width of the knife disappears in the wound, or he uses a knife that is too short so that the end disappears in the wound, or if a foreign object falls over the knife, so the shochet might lose his sight of the incision. A fourth method is called slipping, hagrama. The limits within which the knife may be applied are from the large ring in the windpipe to the top of the upper lobe of the lung when it is inflated, and corresponding to the length of the pharynx. Slaughtering above or below these limits renders the meat unkosher. And the fifth form is called ikur, tearing. If either the esophagus or the trachea is torn during the shechita incision, the carcass is rendered unkosher and cannot be eaten by Jews. Ikur occurs if the shochet accidentally uses a chalat with an imperfection on the blade, such as a scratch or a nick that causes a section of the blade to be lower than the surface of the blade. Breaching any of these five rules renders the animal nevila. The animal is regarded in Jewish law as if it were carrion. The giving of the gifts. Once the animal has been checked and found to be kosher, it is a mitzvah for the shochet to give the foreleg, the cheeks, and the abomasum to a kohen. The bet din, in terms of the root of the obligation, has the halakhic authority to excommunicate a shochet who refuses to perform this mitzvah. In any case, it is desired that the shochet himself refuse to perform the shechita unless the animal's owner expresses his agreement to give the gifts. The Rishonim point out that the shochet cannot claim that since the animal does not belong to him, he cannot give the gifts without the owner's consent. On the contrary, since the average shochet is reputed to be well-versed and knowledgeable in the laws of shechita, bet dins rely on him to withhold his shechita so long as the owner refuses to give the gifts. The obligation of giving the gifts lay upon the shochet to separate the parts due to the kohanim. Apparently, the reasoning is that since the average shochet is a friend, since he completed the prerequisite of understanding the complex laws of shechita and bedika, it is assumed that he as well is knowledgeable in the details of the laws of giving the gifts and will not put the mitzvah aside. This, however, is not the case with the animal's owner, since the average owner is an Am Haaretz, not wholly knowledgeable in the laws of the gifts, and procrastinates in completing the mitzvah. There are minor rules as well. The animal's blood may not be collected in a bowl or a pit or a body of water, as these resemble ancient forms of idol worship. If the shochet accidentally slaughters with a knife dedicated to idol worship, he must remove an amount of meat equivalent to the value of the knife and destroy it. If he slaughtered with such a knife on purpose, the animal is forbidden as not kosher. It is forbidden to slaughter an animal in front of other animals, or to slaughter an animal and its young on the same day, even separately. And this is forbidden no matter how far away the animals are from each other. An animal's young is defined as either its own offspring or another animal that follows it around, even if of another species. The knife used for a shechita is called a chalaf by the Ashkenazim and a sakin by all Jews. By biblical law, the knife may be made from anything not attached directly or indirectly to the ground and capable of being sharpened and polished to the necessary level of sharpness and smoothness required for shechita. The custom now is to use a metal knife. If you think about this paragraph, this law, a rock, even though it can be sharpened, if it's picked off the ground, cannot be used. But if it's separated from another rock that's like a mountain, it can be used. The knife must be minimally 1.5 or 2 times as long as the animal's neck is wide, depending on the species of animal and the number of strokes needed to slaughter the animal, but not so long that the weight of the knife exceeds the weight of the animal's head. If the knife is too large, it is assumed to cause pressing. The knife must not have a point. It is feared a point may slip into the wound during slaughter and cause piercing. The blade may also not be serrated by serrations that cause tearing. The blade may not have imperfections in it. All blades are assumed by Jewish law to be imperfect, so the knife must be checked before each slaughter session, meaning each animal. The shochet must run his fingernail up and down both sides of the blade and on the cutting edge to determine if he can feel any imperfections. He then uses a number of increasingly fine abrasive stones to sharpen and polish the blade until it is perfectly sharp and smooth. After the slaughter, the shochet must check the knife again in the same manner, and to ensure that the blade was not damaged during the shechita. If the blade is found to have been damaged, the meat may not be eaten by Jews. If the blade falls or is lost before the second check is done, the first inspection is relied on and the meat is permitted. The minhag is for the shochet to grow the nail on his little finger, as I mentioned earlier. In previous centuries, the halaf was made of forged steel, which was not reflective and was difficult to make both smooth and sharp. The Baal Shem Tov, fearing the Shabbateans, these are people who followed Shabtai Tzvi, were scratching the knives in a way not detectable by normal people, introduced the Chassidish Halaf. The Chassidish Halaf differs from the previously used knife in that it was made from molten steel and polished to a mirror gloss, in which scratchers could be seen as well as felt. The new knife was controversial and was one of the four reasons listed in the Brody Cherem for the excommunication of the Chassadim. Today, the Chassidish Halaf is the only commercially available knives for Shechita and is universally accepted. Carcass preparation, called bedikah. An animal must be checked again after it has been shechted to see if there were any internal injuries that would have rendered the animal unhealthy before the slaughter, but were simply not visible because they were internal. The inspector must check certain organs, such as lungs, for any scarring which would render the animal trach, not kosher. Glatt means smooth, and in German and Yiddish. In the context of kosher meat, it refers to the smoothness or lack of blemish in the internal organs of the animal. In the case of a scab or lesion on a cow's lungs specifically, there is debate between the Ashkenazic customs and the Sephardic customs. The Ashkenazi Jews hold that if the patch can be removed, there are various methods of removing the patch, and not all of them are acceptable, even according to the Ashkenazi custom. And the lungs are still all airtight, a process that is tested by filling the lungs with air and then submerging them in water and looking for escaping air. Then the animal is still kosher. While the Sephardic Jews hold that if there is any sort of scabbing or lesion on the lungs, then the animal is not kosher. Glatt meat would literally mean that the animal has passed the stringent Sephardic requirements. Porging. After the animal has been thoroughly inspected, there are still steps that have to be taken before the animal can be sold as kosher. It has to be stripped of veins, which is of keleb, which is fat, and suet, and sinews. The Torah prohibits the eating of certain fats and organs, such as the kidneys, intestines, so they must be removed from the animal. These fats are typically known as keleb. There is also a biblical prohibition against eating the sciatic nerve, the gid chanasheh, so that it also is removed. The removal of the chelev and the gid hanesheh, called nikur, is considered complicated and tedious, and hence labor-intensive, and even more specialized training is necessary to perform this act properly. While the small amounts of chelev in the front half of the animal are relatively easy to remove, the back half of the animal is far more complicated, and it is where the sciatic nerve is located. In countries such as the United States, where there exists a large non-kosher meat market, the hindquarters of the animal, where many of these forbidden meats are located, is sold to Gentiles so as to simplify the process. And this tradition goes back for centuries, where local Muslims accept meat slaughtered by Jews as consumable. However, the custom was not universal throughout the Muslim world, and some Muslims, particularly on the Indian subcontinent, did not accept these hindquarters as halal, their form of kashrut. In Israel, on the other hand, specially trained men are hired to prepare the hindquarters for sale as kosher. We are out of time, just a few minutes left, and this is a good place to stop because it's about halfway through the class. And so we will complete this class next week. And the week after, we will follow up on the finishing class 12, sickness and illness. Does anyone have any questions up till now?
Hanok, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay, I had a phone call, so I missed part of it, but I always knew that when you had fish that you used, you know, a separate knife in a separate place and plate, and you removed it from the table before you brought your next course, which I've always done. But I'm thinking, because we don't eat meat, oftentimes I'll fix maybe a salmon casserole or even a fish gumbo. And let's say if it's a salmon casserole, it's partly on the dish, the plate, with other, you know, like a vegetable or two. So with that, and I didn't separate. So I'm wondering if you do have, say, a salmon casserole, then the salmon casserole should be served separately on a separate dish, then removed, and your vegetables then served.
While you were gone, we discussed the concept that the reason why you needed to remove fish from the table has to do with the offense on the Torah. The issue is, fish is represented as an animal who is always surrounded by chesed, always surrounded by water. Vegetables are parav, and can be eaten with meat or with fish, but you don't want them to be mixed, in the sense that if you have a vegetable on the same plate with fish, and then you're going to serve meat, somebody might eat the vegetable that had been touching the fish and then also be eating meat. And so to prevent that, the rabbis instituted this fence around the Torah that says, remove all the fish, the knife, and the fork from the table. But it really isn't necessary if you're not serving meat at all.
Oh, good, because I would have been 25 years of doing this.
So, but it's really based on the fence around the Torah.
Okay.
If you don't understand why that removing the plate from the table, if you didn't ever, nobody ever explained to you, they just said, this is what we do, the Kabbalah would say you're doing something as a command. So for 25 years, you have been doing something as a command. But I'm sure it's through oversight and not on purpose. So
well,
now you know, and you can handle it properly.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of the casserole being, you know, vegetarian. I wasn't thinking fish, you know. So that was good, because I know at Rosh Hashanah, when I had a group of just a few people extra because of COVID, I did have fish, and they did not know about removing the plate and the fork, you know. So it wasn't that I didn't know, it's just I didn't make a connection, because I always think of that casserole as being a non-meat, so I typically call it vegetarian, you know. So thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? You have a beautiful, beautiful afternoon and beautiful week. Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov.
We have more callers as well. Shalom. Shalom to everyone.
Shalom, thank you.